Hi, and welcome to this week's Three Legs, Four Wheels F1 podcast. It's Paul here again with...
Chris.
Dan.
Lee.
And you've noticed there's all four of us here this week, because Lee's now back from holiday, and he's been in Germany and brought us a little present.
I did. I managed to fix German Grand Prix.
That's not bad going.
Had a meeting with them, it's all on for next year, and it's all thanks to me.
Excellent. Well, good work, Lee. Well done.
It's okay.
Let's just hope it's a better race than what we've had to sit through this weekend.
Yeah,
it wasn't the best.
No, it was a bit boring, really. It wasn't the classic Barcelona that we've been used to recent years. On track, there wasn't that much action. Bits and pieces of Lotus, yeah. But, you know, there wasn't...
Strong middle third to the race and some flying front jackmen.
Yeah, flying front jackmen, I think, were probably the highlight of the race. What we learned from that is that the front jackman at McLaren is in the wrong job, and you know, with that kind of reactions, he should probably have been a goalkeeper or something.
That guy's got some moves. He looked like Strictly Come Dancing when he threw that
absolutely
out of the way. It was ace.
Oh, the guy from Lotus had some moves. It's just that they were all sort of horizontal and airborne.
Ice pack to the gentleman's area afterwards. It was a sight to behold. After the race, you saw him being carted off with his leg in plaster as well.
On a pallet trolley. No expense spared.
No, but by one of the team bosses as well. So, you know, no expense spared at all whatsoever. They got the best people in for the job.
Say no expense spared. That trolley is the envy of Manna.
That trolley is the envy of Manna. It's the envy of Pastor Maldonado, who has finished more races than he has this
It was unfortunate from this weekend, though, wasn't it?
It was a little bit. I mean, I'm not sure if he was entirely to blame for what happened in that third turn incident.
Was it Grosjean? Grosjean hit the back of him,
Yeah, it was a slight coming together, and what appears to be the energy transfer through broke Maldonado's rear wing. But even with a broken rear wing, he had a good race up to that point, and he was still managed to catch and pass.
I was surprised he wasn't black flagged.
To be honest, you would have thought it would have been sensible to do that before the team pulled him in, just because of the danger of leaving more rubbish on the track, and after Grosjean losing the back half of his bodywork in spectacular fashion in practice on Friday.
And you're forgetting the fact that Maldonado is generally dangerous enough with a fully functioning Formula One car.
That is true. So if there's a bit missing off the back, then you don't know which direction he's going to go. Actually, you don't know which direction he's going to go anyway. Looking at what happened in the race, Ferrari. Oh, they got it wrong. Somebody agree with me.
Yes. Did they get it wrong? They were third. They didn't get it wrong.
Well,
they were third, but 40 seconds behind the Mercedes ahead of them.
Yeah, but I don't think they've got anything wrong. They just weren't as quick as Mercedes.
We'll come to that later in a feature that we'll get to at the end of the podcast called the Captain Obvious Award. But they also only put the ran the new spec on Vettel's car. Kimi was running the previous spec from Bahrain, which he said was as a favour to the team. Anyone got any ideas?
It's a nice way of saying I'm number two driver.
Is it a nice way of saying he's number two driver, or is it? The team have coaxed him into saying we need the data from the old spec and the new spec. We're unsure of the new spec, so we're going to put it on Sebastian's car. Whereas what they've actually said to Sebastian is, you're our number one driver, you get the upgrades. Yeah, you get the new parts first.
12 untested upgrades at once. Go race.
Yeah, was it 12 or was it 16?
16.
I mean, Kimi did have some new bits on his car. It weren't all... It wasn't all for the complete Bahrain spec. I do believe he had something... new at the rear of the car. I'm not sure. I think it was a diffuser.
I think most teams, except Force India, were running with new diffusers. Possibly not Manor as well.
Yeah, Force India and Manor, I think, were the only two teams to turn up with no upgrades at all. We'll move on to Force India a little bit later on. But yeah, I mean, Ferrari did get it wrong. I don't know why they didn't split their strategy, or at least try and cover off Lewis Hamilton when they decided, But when Mercedes decided to pit Lewis Hamilton and their strategy became clear, I don't know why Ferrari didn't try and cover Sebastian Vettel. Try and cover him off with Sebastian Vettel's stop. But they didn't. They got it wrong. And as you rightfully pointed out, they finished 40-something seconds behind Mercedes, which for a team that has won a race this year and looks like being really close to Mercedes, it isn't good enough.
the only thing is, we keep talking about what Ferrari had on the car. Maybe Mercedes just took a step forward. Maybe whatever they brought to Spain has worked really well, and they've pulled more time out.
Yeah, I mean, there were a few upgrades, of course, to the Mercedes car, as there were to most of the front runners. But straight from the start, you know, Nico Rosberg got a brilliant start, Lewis Hamilton less so. And I've got to wonder if Sebastian Vettel hadn't got past Lewis Hamilton at the beginning, how much did that flatter Ferrari being closer in the early stages? Had Lewis Hamilton stayed ahead, would he have built that gap to more than 40 seconds? Would it be closer to a minute between the Mercedes had Hamilton been able to push Rosberg later on in the race?
Well, he still did want to push him towards the end when he eventually got told it was impossible.
Yeah, said that it was impossible to catch and pass Vettel, and then said, "Don't tell me it's not possible, man," when it came to time to catch Rosberg with three laps to go, 12 seconds behind.
And you notice he used "man," which he only ever seems to do when he's not at his happiest, shall we say.
And "don't talk to me through the corners," which we've heard before.
Plenty of times. And he didn't want talking to through the straights either.
No, don't talk to me at all.
There was a little bit of me thought when he had the radio conversation about catching Rosberg. I was thinking, oh, come on. You know you can't catch him. He's far too far down the road. You just want to sound cool over team radio on television.
I think a part of that is because he can't look to give up after the war of words between himself and Nico.
Yeah.
When Nico looked weak and saying that he couldn't catch Lewis because Lewis was going slower than him.
Yeah.
He couldn't allow himself to be portrayed like that. So he decided to, no matter what happened, he was going
to
try.
He wanted to look like the fighter.
Yeah, he wanted to look like the fighter. He wanted to look like the man.
I mean, of course, this is taking nothing away from Nico Rosberg's win.
No, he drove brilliantly. He started well, really qualified better.
Started better, had a great race. It's what he needed.
Absolutely.
Dan, you look like you're going to say something.
No.
Is this going to be the beginning of a Rosberg like championship fight back?
It could be if the upgrades which McLaren have done favour Nico more than they do Lewis, then yes, we could very easily.
You mean Mercedes?
Who did I say?
You said McLaren.
No, I thought McLaren. I thought I said Mercedes.
Who's this guy?
Someone who was faster than Jenson Button.
Yeah, he is.
I leave you alone for 1 week. Fake Lee's rubbish.
he's not really.
You should have heard my predictions last week.
And mine.
I'm saying nothing.
And Paul's. We were all wrong.
Unpredictable Barcelona, we called it.
We did call it Unpredictable Barcelona. And in the end...
And then we made predictions about it.
Yeah. And most of them were wrong because we expected it to be more unpredictable than it was.
Yeah, well, I went and bet on McLaren to get a podium. Then I Jedi mind tricked you into doing it.
I did it, admittedly. Yeah, I put some money on McLaren to score a podium. It didn't happen, of course, but never mind. They only lost £2.
But anyway, Dan, you were saying if Mercedes
have got upgrades favour Nico more than they do Lewis, because of course these things make a very small difference, but a small difference is enough to flip in favour of one driver rather than the other.
Yeah.
When you got two drivers that are, let's face it, so close in ability and so close in speed, the minutest improvement that favours your driving style over your teammates, it's going to work to your advantage.
So it could potentially be the start of a Nico resurgence, or it could be a one-off thing.
I think Hamilton's comments about clutches was interesting.
I missed that. What did you say about the clutches? The power,
they had different clutches. The Rosberg went back to last year's clutch,
mm-hmm.
where Hamilton had this year's clutch, and he brought it up in an because Nico had already said about the fact that he'd gone back to the other clutch and he thought that might be the best way for him in the future.
Mm-hmm.
And Hamilton said, "Oh, like Nico said, we had different clutches, and maybe that's something we need to address."
Right, okay, so he feels as though perhaps Nico's got a bit of a technical jump on him.
Possibly,
by going back to the old clutch. It's an interesting point, but when you're Nico Rosberg and you're now, was it 20 points rather than 27 points behind in the championship, you take any advantage you can.
Of course, yeah. But Nico's one of those drivers as well that's good at getting things around him. You know, he's good at setting a car up. He's good at getting what he needs. So, if there's a case where there's parts to be had, you'd argue that Nico might be the best guy to decide what's better than Lewis, in my opinion, anyway.
That is a pretty valid point. I mean, he spent more time with the team than Lewis, and he knows how the development works better than Lewis does. I mean, admittedly, you know, Lewis was grown in a test tube to race Formula One cars, but he was grown in a test tube to race McLaren Formula One cars.
Yeah,
and they're going to have a completely different way of working. Talking to teams that have a completely different way of working, the Toro Rosso Red Bull competition.
Yeah, they had a fairly good scrap at times on track, mainly into Turn 1. We saw both Red Bulls attacking both Toro Rossos and then vice versa later on in the race. At one point, I think it was Daniel Ricciardo got it horribly wrong, ran wide and allowed the Toro Rosso driver to come back at him. I was surprised by Toro Rosso in the qualifying. Managed to get both cars into Q3
with Sainz ahead of Verstappen, who everyone is rating at the moment.
Yeah, Sainz did brilliantly in his home race. Kimi Raikkonen was a banker for fifth towards the closing stages of Q3, and then all of a sudden he's down to seventh, and the third row was taken up by Toro Rosso, as you say, Dan. Sainz ahead of Verstappen. And then in the race, I was really hoping for some special things from one or both of them. But I don't know what Toro Rosso did, whether they set the car up for qualifying or really don't know what they did. But they appeared to have too much downforce. They didn't have any speed on the straights. And it hurt their race badly, and they just ended up going backwards. And hence why they ended up falling into the clutches of the team that was supposed to be ahead of them, Red Bull.
I think whatever the setup was for the Toro Rosso might have flattered them a little bit more than it probably should have been
in qualifying. Perhaps it did, but nevertheless, to get both drivers fifth and sixth for Toro Rosso.
I mean, that's the first time that Toro Rosso got both drivers into Q3 in Barcelona, as the media were trumpeting all the weekend. And we say it time and time again, for the fact that they are young drivers as well, then it's no mean feat. But moving back into Red Bull, this week's Red Bull to quit thing is, yes, they're going to quit if they don't get a better engine or Audi don't come in, according to Helmut Marko. Was he this week's complainer?
Helmut Marko has been on the phone apparently to VW.
Probably just wants his polo servicing or something.
Well, needs a spare tyre put on his Golf.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised, to be quite honest with you. But Helmut Marko, he says a lot, and a lot doesn't happen, which is, I think, is something Mark Webber was alluding to when he was interviewed at some point during the weekend. The person to listen to and to trust, according to Mark Webber, is Mateschitz. Whatever he says is pretty much what happens. He doesn't say a lot, but when he does say it, you listen to him.
Yeah, it's his company. He is the ultimate boss.
Yeah. Absolutely, yeah. And Christian Horner, despite jumping to Renault's defence almost last week, has now this week said that it's the season is over. There's not going to be anything to take from this season for Red Bull or for Renault or any Renault powered team.
I don't think you can argue with that though. When you look at the state the team's in at the minute, and you like look at the engines they've been through.
Mm-hmm.
The moaning's getting boring, but on the other hand, it's understandable. You've got a team there that's used to be one of the best teams in the championship. Won four championships on the bounce, and now look where they are.
Racing for seventh place.
Yeah,
back where they were in the Coulthard era.
Yeah, yeah. Pretty much.
Yeah, yeah,
when they couldn't decide who the second driver was from week to week.
That's it.
What the livery was.
Do you reckon we're going to see that again? There was talk again of Red Bull changing the lineup before much longer.
Yeah,
I don't think the lineup's the problem. They might well change it, but that's not where their problems lie.
No, because Daniel Ricciardo has, on occasion this season, outperformed that car and done better than the car should have done. Whereas on the other end of the spectrum, Danny Kvyat, stepping up into Vettel's seat, hasn't at all performed as well as the car should be able to perform. And we've seen the fortunes turn around with Toro Rosso being ahead of Red Bull. And there has been, of course, the rumours escalated again by this weekend of either Sainz or Verstappen stepping up before the end of the season into the Red Bull team.
I think you could replace Danny Kvyat with either of them and you'd probably be doing yourself a favour, but I still think...
Would they want to?
Well, that's the thing. But I mean, it's not up to them, is it?
Lee, you said it the other week. If they've got any sense, they won't. They'll stay where they are while they're outperforming.
It's not
team.
Up to them, though, is them?
True.
And the other thing to say is that I think there's certain moments in this championship so far which have given a slightly false impression of where Red Bull is to Toro Rosso. Because let's not forget, Daniel Ricciardo was still ahead of them in the championship. He still scored more points.
Mm-hmm, true.
And that gap should be even bigger, because one of the times, I can't remember who it was, I think it was Verstappen, wasn't it, went past Ricciardo, was because his car was broken when he went past him.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. So that gap should be bigger. The car's still there. It's Danny Kvyat which is making it look more equal on terms, I think. And Ricciardo, to me, is just as impressive this year as he was last year, just maybe not quite as noisy about it because he's not getting all the podiums.
Yeah, no, that is a fair point. Looking at some of the other teams, how they've come out of this weekend, one to forget for Lotus.
Very
definitely.
Much so. Yeah.
Yeah, we'll just sweep that under the rug, just like the Marshalls were sweeping bits of car off the track. Not the best weekend for McLaren as well.
No, we were expecting, we've always said right from the beginning of the season, Europe is where things start to change for McLaren. Europe is where we'll see the upgrades and the performance that the car needs. They turn up in Spain and with a new livery and a spectacular show on Thursday, which we'll mention in a minute. They turn up with a new livery and everything, and the car is worse, if not...
Fernando was doing okay until the brakes.
He was doing no better than last weekend, though. No. You know, he was knocking on the door of the point, but only knocking on the door.
It's McLaren, he shouldn't be doing okay, he should be doing great.
Yeah. Jenson Button was doing much better than last week.
Yeah.
He was in the race.
He was in the race.
Barely.
Beat the manners.
I can't believe it. I really thought when they released the new livery that they were going to have, because the thing they had before this, that what they launched the car with, was horrible. And in my head, I'd sort of thought to myself, well, maybe they've just done that because it keeps Honda was a bit more low key on the car and stuff. They didn't quite have the visibility. Maybe that was McLaren's way of saying, well, We won't make noises or many noises until we've sorted things out. So with them essentially relaunching the car, I thought they've got to have something. You know, I thought definitely in it for the points. And if something quirky happens, they might even get a podium or something. But
Jenson Button ended up saying that the car felt dangerous to drive. And didn't know what was wrong with it.
Yeah. No traction, no grip, no back end.
No, if you put the foot down going into a corner, the back end would snap. And if you put your foot down going onto the straight, coming out of a corner, then you were going off the track, basically. Yeah.
And for a driver of Jenson Button's experience to be saying he doesn't know what's wrong with the car,
then it's a huge turn.
Yeah. And from the start of the season, they've been saying the chassis is good, the chassis is solid. So what on earth have they done to break that?
Maybe they had the performance as well, and. They had the performance and it was working in Fernando's car, but because he had the performance and he had to maybe be on the brakes a bit harder than he would normally be used to in this car, that he just burned his brakes out so quickly. But kudos to the McLaren Jackman for getting out of the way.
I'd hazard a guess though that for Jensen's car, something was broken in it You know, I don't think that was just a balance problem he had, or, you know, something that either yeah. that car started the Grand Prix and broke it.
Not at 100%.
Yeah.
I mean, it was still faster than the Manners, which we can take away. But
yeah, I mean, Jenson Button actually ended with, for all of his problems and basically pussyfooting it around the circuit for 66 laps or however many laps he ended up doing, he actually managed to lap the Manners.
Yeah.
So that's how desperate the situation is for Manor at the moment, and we hope that that improves for them sometime soon.
And we'd like them to answer their emails as well.
We would love them to answer their emails. If anyone from Manor is listening, oi, answer your emails. Check your junk filter.
One thing that I did find out tonight, Roberto Meri's qualifying time would have put him plumb last on the grid for the GP2 race as well.
They're not a Formula One team. I know that doesn't sound good considering we want them to email us back. But no, they're not a Formula One team.
Hopefully, they will be when they get their upgrade.
Oh, they weren't a Formula One car. They weren't a Formula One team last year. They weren't a Formula One team the year before.
They were a Formula One team last year. They got points in Monaco.
Oh, okay, in Monaco, where crazy, crazy things happen. Like, what's his name? Prost wins a fucking race.
You've heard it here first. We've said Monaco is going to be unpredictable, so look forward to a dull, boring, processional Monaco Grand Prix. Yeah,
Monaco has been boring.
It's always processional.
Yeah.
But then there's usually
something spectacular there.
There's not a whole lot of overtaking goes on in Monaco, though.
No, there usually isn't. And for the last few years, it has been a bit of a procession. But we'll talk about Monaco more next week.
Good plug. That basically leaves, who have we missed out? Force India, yeah, they turned up. They turned up with the exact same spec car that they've had for the first four races.
Sounds like a very bad sign.
Yeah, they've gone backwards on the grid. Are we going to be seeing Force India still in Formula 1 next season?
I said at the beginning of the season that before Formula 1's...
you did.
Force India's last.
You did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If they made the grid, actually, they surprised me by making the grid.
Yeah, but they only launched their car the last day of the last test, didn't they?
Yeah, running the test with the 2014 car with the 2015 package on.
Trying to sell their test seat to doesn't bode well for Force India. I'm wondering if they're in more, you know, financial bother than they're letting on.
Well, I mean, we've never spoke about this. I mean, we spoke about this off podcast, and this is what I get confused about with them. Is the fact that their team owner owns most of the companies that are plastered on the outside of the car.
Yeah, I mean, it's not outside money, is it?
So the only reason that team could be struggling for money is because Vijay Mallya isn't paying what he should be paying for Formula One advertisement.
Yeah, it's like, Paul, if you owned a Formula One team and then went and put Paul on the side of your car...
That'd be awesome.
It'd be awesome, but they'd be skint by the time the car was shipping out for the first test.
I do seem to remember some Formula One cars with David and Miko written on them.
Actually, yeah, they didn't do too badly, did they?
They were very good cars, but they were of course the they were what's it called
cigarette sponsorship.
Yeah, cigarette sponsorship. Yes, yeah.
Bitten and Hisses and Buzzing Hornets.
Yeah, I remember Bitten and Hisses.
Oh, and that's Chewy. That was another one on the job.
We're talking about teams there as well, which obviously had more of a budget than half-eaten Twix.
Yeah,
left Twix or right Twix. Other snacks are available.
Which one was the good brother?
Michael, rather than Ralph. we've not mentioned Sauber either. They turned up. They
nondescript
performed.
Race, we've not mentioned Williams either, and exactly the same.
Well, yeah.
Bottas did a good job.
It was solid but quiet, and nothing more than you'd expect.
They're in F1 limbo, aren't they? They're not as quick as Ferrari. They're quicker than Red Bull, so they just drive around on their own all day and occasionally lap a Marussia.
Well, yeah, no, I mean, Bottas did well to stay ahead of Raikkonen for the whole race, right at the end where Kimi was applying a bit of pressure. I think Kimi applied a bit too much pressure because he let his own tyres go right at the end, whereas Bottas, I don't know what it is about him. He stays very calm under a lot of pressure. I saw it in Singapore, was it last year or the year before? when his tyres went completely off and he looked like he was driving on marbles and was skating all over the circuit, lost about 12 places on the final lap. But at no point did he panic and put the car into the wall or anything
finished,
like that.
They permanently, temporarily sedated.
It's possible, but...
Oh, they started calling him Ice Boy this weekend.
Oh, you can Ice Boy.
I mean, it does sound like a bad superhero.
Iceman and Ice Boy. Strike again.
Ice Boy and Flame Woman.
No, she test drive the Lotus.
I test drive the Lotus test drive.
That's one for the Christmas tea.
Edit. Boop.
Don't edit it. She might like me.
Moving on this week, we've got the next meeting of the F1 strategy group at Bernie Eccleston's Biggin Hill Airport Complex this Friday.
They renamed that?
I think
it just used to be called Biggin Hill.
According to Autosport, it's Eccleston's Biggin Hill. So Eccleston Biggin himself up. Oh, get me killed. So, obviously they're going to be discussing things like the 2017 regulations and what they're going to do with the engines, but we'll take a different slant on this. What would we like them to talk about?
Clowns.
Well, there's enough of them.
Well, yeah. No, to be honest with you, part of the discussion is going to be to how they can improve the show with the new regulations. Looking at the Grand Prix we've just had in Barcelona, they do need to improve the show somewhat, especially when you look at other formulas and you know the close racing that there is between drivers, or you know even in the case of MotoGP, the riders, you know, it's a lot closer racing in other sports. They don't want to lose out to these other sports or the formulas that are having closer racing, because you know at the end of the day it's going to stop the fans coming in. The fans is what brings money to the sport. So I'd like to see them improve the show somehow, but don't start asking me how, because then that is where all these mad ideas come from. Sprinklers,
fan boost,
reverse grids,
they can do
potato grids.
Taking themselves.
That's a waffle.
Yes, it is.
They could do not take themselves seriously. That's the wrong thing to say. Formula One takes itself very, very seriously. But, Formula One needs to stop berating itself, like with the new engines and stuff like that. If the media side of it hadn't have kept going, oh, the engines are too quiet, oh, they're too quiet, that would have all gone within two races instead of being dragged out through the whole season and still being spoke about now and again. Even commentators turn around and go, oh, if you're getting a good race, and to think people were worried that the engines were too quiet. You know, if they stop bringing these things up and just talk about the positives of it, and then stop Bernie Eccleston having stupid ideas like, you know,
double points, medals.
I don't even mean that. I mean like the technology they've got in the hybrid engines, and he's talking about scrapping the hybrid engines.
Yeah, know, no one's going to agree to that. But I've said it before. The only way I think the sport can really move forward is if you either essentially turn it into GP1. By restricting everything, not necessarily having the same chassis, but by putting massive restrictions on it, which then stops it from becoming a prototype formula, or you de-restrict everything. And everything is undisclosed.
Yeah.
You know, where, engine maps, engine configurations, anything like that. I think you explained in it in a previous podcast, Lee, that you think some teams think that would kill the sport because it kills competition. I don't think it would. I think it would make competition more fierce, and it would end up closer racing.
I think it would make teams lazy.
I would love a return to the days where they had absolutely out of the box ideas like 6-wheeled cars, extra fans for extra downforce.
Yeah, fans under the car. Yeah.
But
not like fans from the stands. Yeah. Like
fans. Enter a competition right under the car.
You can be the plank.
Well, there's always one plank under a car somewhere, isn't there?
Or in a Lotus, it's in the cockpit.
Yeah, well, hello, well Pastor.
Done. You are Maldonado's front wing.
Yeah, but as fans, what we want is close racing, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Let's be fair. And my My favourite solution to that has always been what they used in touring cars for several years, which was, as you win races, you get more and more weight penalty.
Yeah.
So, which obviously slows you down, brings you closer to the cars behind you, but any work that the mechanics are doing to give you an advantage still counts, it still pulls you ahead. But you've got this ballast pulling you back and keeping the field close together.
It is a shame.
If Lewis Hamilton wins, he should eat a Big Mac.
Yeah. Then again, Lewis appears to be getting extra weight with every win anyway, because I'm convinced he gets a new gold chain every time he wins a race.
He's turning into Mr. Link put in it.
Well, no, because... He's
turning into Mr. T.
He's won three this season. He's got three thick gold chains.
Three or four?
Four, sorry. He's got... After he'd won...
He has won three.
I was going to say, he's the number of chains that he was wearing, he didn't do it in Spain, but he was doing it in Bahrain. He had one thick chain for every win, and then a thinner one for when he didn't.
Jesus, he's going to look like a middle-class holidaymaker in Spain by the end of the season.
So maybe they're bringing the ballast in just for the podium to see how it works, and then I'll actually try it on track next year.
Yeah, I mean, it's like some sort of penalty for victory is it wouldn't be popular to start with, but yeah, it would make the racing closer. I mean, if you had the Mercedes almost twice the weight of, say, the Manners at the back,
yeah,
how close would it bring them together?
Well, it's not right for, in my eyes, that you shouldn't be penalised for winning.
But think about what the most boring seasons have been. They have been where one driver has dominated. Sometimes you get one team dominating, and as long as the two drivers in that team are racing each other, it's still an exciting season. But if you've got one guy running away with it, it's a snooze fest.
Can I just say, though, a MotoGP, Marc Marquez absolutely ran away with the title last year, and it wasn't boring. It was always exciting racing. It was always close racing. And there's Marquez won, what was it, like 13 out of the 15 races, something ridiculous like that. But it
was what happened up to the checkered flag that was exciting.
It was, yeah.
You can have the same guy winning every race, but if he's running away with it, if he's 20, 30 seconds, half a lap ahead.
Yeah. That's when it gets
Formula One has one problem, really. One single problem. And that's Eddie Jordan. No, it's the fact that the cars can't follow each other. If the cars could follow each other, like IndyCar, we were watching an IndyCar race.
The Alabama one.
They could follow each other, but they'd have to make their cars slower to follow each other. The only reason that they don't follow each other at the moment is because of these front wings that they've started putting in the cars. In that case,
we need to stop relying so much on aerodynamic grip and work out a way of giving the cars more mechanical grip.
I would agree with that, because less aero is more fun. They narrowed the wings, didn't they, for the new turbo V6 era, and initially caused a little bit of a problem for some of the drivers. You saw cars sliding around in the early 2014 season. But what it's ended up with is these wings with like almost like skyscraper style towers built on them, and to force airflow into certain places in the car where it's going to perform better, and it just makes them so fragile that in turbulent air, or if they get destabilized by anything, whether it's running over the curb, the car becomes completely undrivable because it loses all front end downforce.
Tell it's past Maldonado.
Or it's past Maldonado, yeah.
But this is why DRS was brought in, because you couldn't get into the dirty air behind a car.
Yeah.
So you couldn't overtake.
But I mean, the idea of DRS first was just to get your car alongside. Now it's just a slam dunk every time you get close to a car, isn't it?
It is.
While you've still got the tyres to.
Mr. Rosberg would argue about that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's almost a slam dunk pass every time, but it depends on the circuit.
Unless you're McLaren.
Unless you're at Monaco, which we're going to next. Mm-hmm. Well, not us personally, but the Formula One circus moves on to Monaco.
If anyone wants to donate any tickets, we can set up a Kickstarter immediately, by the way.
Yeah, please feel free to send us free tickets to Monaco. We would like that a lot. And, but at Monaco, the DRS zone is effectively useless.
Yeah.
At some races, it's more effective than it is at others because of the nature of the circuit. I like the one, the double DRS at Abu Dhabi, for example, with the chicane in between the two DRS zones, because you get either somebody gets really close or gets passed in the first DRS zone, and if you've been passed, then you have the second DRS zone to have an attempt to get back at them. That works really well, but there are very limited circuits where you get to use it so effectively.
Yeah, my issue with the double ones is, like, is Canada's still, like, essentially one DRS zone, isn't it, split over two straights?
Canada's DRS zone is almost a double DRS zone, with similar to Abu Dhabi, but with the World Champions chicane in between it.
Yeah, but there's only one.
Is there one activation
one
zone?
Activation zone.
I don't know about that.
So you nail them on the first straight,
and then you got to get
go through the chicane. Get the second one. You're out of DRS, but then no one can fight back.
Right, and I'm not sure if that's the case or whether it will be the case.
I think it used to be the case. I don't know whether it is this year.
Yeah. But DRS and DRS activation zones, you know, it's
Kurs was better than DRS in my eyes. If they had Kurs, which made that like a push to pass button, which it was designed for, but make that more powerful than it was.
Well, they have ERS, don't they?
That's what they've got. They use it the whole way through.
Yeah. But I mean, yeah, that's what I mean. They're using that more tactically now, aren't they? Whereas a multi-use push-to-pass button.
Yeah, but they have like overtake buttons where they can choose to expel the charge of their battery very, very quickly in order to give themselves a huge boost. They can use what you hear on team radio, as most teams talking to, referring to as the overtake button.
Yeah.
You can use the overtake button if you need to. Mm-hmm. There are gadgets and toys. But, I mean, where do you stop putting gadgets and toys on the cars? Is it better to just get rid of everything and start, you know, put it back to where the drivers were in complete control of nothing but an engine and a chassis and four wheels and maybe a little bit of bodywork, depending on whether you drive for Lotus or not, and see what happens with that? Because at the end, you can't forget that it's a prototype formula, mm-hmm. and the technology does trickle down into road cars eventually, but you've got to have racing, otherwise the sport's going to be in trouble.
Well, the other way to look at that would be is, instead of thinking of it as being a prototype formula for gadgets and gizmos that are going to filter down, maybe it should be looked at as a prototype formula of, whereas here's a set of rules, go make the fastest car you can possibly make.
Yeah.
But this is the issue. Probably since 97 is when I remembered it being like sort of more pushed forward, you know, because the groove tyres came in 97, I think, didn't they?
A bit later, possibly.
I think it was 98.
Was it?
I'm sure. Oh.
It was in the 90s.
I can't remember anyway. But no, I remember in 97 there was that big concerted effort of, let's slow the cars down because it's getting dangerous. And are we now at the real bad end of trying to slow the cars down, you know, where the things are being meddled with and interfered with so much? This is why these problems are here, because it's just a constant evolving, changing rule set,
mm-hmm.
in order to we need to try and fix them now so they can get close to each other. They used to be able to get close to each other,
mm-hmm.
And when they started making cars slower and putting these roadblocks in the way, that's when teams started relying more on aero. So I don't know what the solution is.
To be honest, I think the last two or three years, Barcelona this year is an exception, but recently we've had classic years of racing. It's been brilliant compared to mid-90s, Schumacher era, when he was running away with everything and every race was a procession.
Yeah.
The only overtaking you saw was in the pits. It's brilliant nowadays.
Yeah,
I don't think too much needs changing.
Yeah, you know, perhaps one of the most recent classic races, as I've mentioned many times before, Bahrain last year was a great race, even though most of it was between the two Mercedes. After that safety car, further back you had a lot of racing as well. A lot of really close, really good racing. A lot of the cameras were, of course, focused on the Hamilton-Rosberg battle at the front. But more races like that are what the sport needs, and this is the strategy group. I can see it now. Bernie's going to be like, well, we need a safety car, just for the sake of having a safety car restart. So yeah, it's the strategy group, they've got some work to do because we can't figure it out. So,
well, so the top and bottom of it could more realistically is it's not the formula that we have a problem with. It's money.
Yeah, money is
because that's why Mercedes are there, because they've simply spent more money.
Yeah,
they've spent more money doing stuff.
And it's why Ferrari are right behind them at the moment.
Yeah, because they're shoveling money into it, although they're on the back foot a little bit. If they'd have shoveled money into it when the engine rigs changed, we might be having a championship with Mercedes and Ferrari neck and neck.
Mm-hmm.
But the money thing's a completely different problem, isn't it?
Totally.
It's a global problem, that. Yeah. It's not a Formula One problem.
Yeah. And I don't think we've got the time to go into economic strategy here. No. Now it's time for a new Three Legs, Four Wheels feature. The occasional Captain Obvious Award. And we've got two nominations from this week. First one being everybody's favourite, Eric Boullier, who has come out and said, "For all at McLaren, a team that has won the Spanish Grand Prix no fewer than 8 times in our illustrious history, it's superfluous to state that this afternoon has been a more than somewhat disappointing one." He's gone on to say quite a lot of other things and use syllables that didn't really need using.
He swallowed a thesaurus.
I think swallowed, imbibed, inhaled. He could have summed it up by saying, okay, that didn't go well. But instead, we've got a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 paragraph press release from him with... for anyone that's watched Yes Minister or Yes Prime Minister, hours and hours of Sir Humphrey-esque fun. And if you've never watched it, go watch it. So that's our first nomination. Our second nomination goes to Sebastian Vettel, who said, "Mercedes beat Ferrari because they were too quick." Well, so, votes. I'm saying Vettel.
Yeah, I'm going with Sebastian Vettel. I'd like to give Eric Boullier an award of a different nature for that rant.
I'll go Vettel. I'd like to give Eric Boullier a drop kick.
So, congratulations, Sebastian Vettel. You are the first recipient of the Three Legs, Four Wheels Captain Obvious Award.
Bum, bum, bum.
In other things, the McLaren Tag Heuer launch... holographic,
yeah,
Ayrton Senna CGI car.
We touched on it a bit last week, didn't we? Because McLaren put out a couple of posters on Instagram and other social media platforms where everything was red and white, and
it got us all excited.
It did. There were rumours of the new livery, which of course turned out to be more black and white than white and red.
Is it red? It looks orange to me. I'm colourblind.
Yeah, it could be like an orange. Yes, Lee. He's got his hand up.
Do you think the car was supposed to be red and white? Then when they realised that they had a dog shit car,
it was supposed to be red and black.
It was supposed to be red and white at the beginning of the season. Do you think it was supposed to be that? Then when they realised they didn't have the car for it, they went, oh.
People might mistake them for manners.
We've still got some black paint and some silver paint. Let's do that. We'll red and white it next year.
And we'll say it's because it was because of the lights and the night races made it very difficult.
Yeah.
It'll be red and white next year when they're good.
Also, an interesting point to raise. Drivers aren't allowed to change their helmets because of identification throughout the season, but a team can change its entire livery. Well done, Formula One, for that one. But
kilo lighter, though, isn't it?
Apparently so.
Yeah, the black paint is a kilo and a half lighter than the silver paint.
Yeah, which is something you touched on last week.
I did.
Yeah. Is that made of real silver then?
No, I think lead. Yeah. You know what they do with all the lead they take out of the petrol?
Yeah, it's on the McLaren, or it was. But yeah, no,
the only thing is lead this season.
Well, maybe that's because the Honda McLaren thing was powered by dreams. Those dreams have been well and truly taken out of the car.
But of course, Mercedes powered by dramas.
Absolutely.
We'll let you finish, Chris.
I was going to say McLaren put out all these red and white, don't crack under the pressure pictures of their two drivers Jensen Button and Fernando Alonso, with Ayrton Senna looking over their shoulders. Senna's old car sort of overtake what looked like overtaking the current, or now former current, McLaren. We all got a bit excited. We thought the livery might change to the old classic red and white. Turned out it was a Tag Heuer event where McLaren basically we're celebrating 30 years of partnership with Tag Heuer, in which Fernando Alonso sort of stumbled on stage in the darkness, and the hologram of Ayrton Senna's car was there. If you haven't seen it, go on YouTube and just search.
I'll put the link up on the site.
Thanks, Paul.
It is well worth seeing. As a special mention, if you've seen Birdemic, you will know what the CGI will be like.
Yeah, it's like if you ever played Super Monaco Grand Prix 2 on the Mega Drive. That Ayrton Senna walks onto the stage, gives a wave, and
repeatedly checks his watch
for a very long time.
Well, it wasn't a very exciting press event, was it?
No, it wasn't. I mean, he doesn't even look anything like Ayrton Senna. Sorry, but McLaren got that very wrong. Whether if it was McLaren, it may have been Tag Heuer, of course, who came up with the idea.
It looked like Nickelodeon. Oh, I've gone now. I forgot what I was going to say.
Okay. Basically, it looked like a kids' TV programme.
Yeah, well, no, sorry, it looked like Nickelodeon, Thunderbirds and Formula One had a child.
I like the new series of Thunderbirds, actually.
Yeah, but
this isn't a Thunderbird cast.
But I cannot understand why they did it. I mean, have some old footage projected of Ayrton Senna at a Tag Heuer event, because he did do Tag Heuer events when he was a McLaren driver.
Yeah, well, McLaren own most, if not all, of Tag Heuer anyway.
Well, perhaps they do, but I wasn't aware of that. But I mean, even still,
it's how their engines are powered
by time. No, thinking about it, actually, McLaren did used to be years ago McLaren Tag.
Yeah.
So, I think
Porsche engines are rebranded as Tags.
Possibly. And was it when they were McLaren Tag Porsche?
Yeah. And useless.
But yeah, this hologram then pulls his helmet over his head and then ridiculously ponders around his own car as though he's going to fall over it, and then gets in as though he's cacked his pants and drives off. It's really is something to watch, if only to laugh at. I mean, it's not, there's so many sentimental things you could have done. That was the wrong way to go about it.
And talking of checking watches, I think it's round about that time. Thanks for listening this week. Keep checking the site, we will get round to updating it quite a bit more. Just been a little bit busy. And also, for anyone that listens to this that likes NFL, we've now got a sister site, which is threelegsfourthdown.com, where we're doing the podcast on there as well. I had to get that plug in,
of course.
Yep. And we'll be back next week with a preview of Monaco and whatever other crazy ideas we can come up with between now and then.
We'll see you with free tickets.
And if you want to send us free tickets, we're still here. But yeah. We'll see you soon.
Bye
bye.